Welcome to the Rookie Investor Podcast. This week we are going to do a deep dive into the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange Top 200, versus the S&P 500, or the top 500 companies in the United States. A crazy stat, only one in four Australians invest outside of Australia. So that statistic is pretty crazy, considering we're the 16th biggest market in the world. 16.
It's interesting. And sorry, before we go on, I've got a bit of a cough. It's not coronavirus. That's a really relevant thing at the moment. But probably when you're listening to this podcast, you'll be like, what's he on about? Anyway, so unfortunately, you'll hear me coughing intermittently throughout. Excuse me. That is a bizarre stat, considering there's this world of investment. But I suppose, does that talk about the people that are investing, as in it's mom and pops investing in local companies? They're not really out there actually trying to really generate money. They're just investing as a way to, because someone said you need to have an investment portfolio.
I think so. Well, you see this history of people saying that it's difficult to invest overseas, and difficult and probably dangerous or risky, which probably up until last 10 to 15 years, it was difficult because you'd have to, you know, contact your stockbroker and get on the phone and do that kind of process. But now we have so much access to international markets, you can do it quite easily. So I think people are just scared of the unknown, so didn't sort of do it. I think property is the same. There's a massive percentage of people when they buy investment property, it's in the suburb that they live in. They just go with what's kind of familiar.
Yeah, and you know, that's not a bad thing. I think sometimes it is good to go with what you know. We've spoken about that in terms of stocks. You look at stock picks on what you know, because you're the one that's going to know the most about what you know. Like if you're looking in an industry that's completely different to what you know, it's hard to click in when there's other people out there who are far more sort of understanding of that industry. So there is a benefit in that. But not as a stock market, I agree. I mean, we're big on the S&P. We're big on international stock markets, but particularly the US, because the volume of trading creates opportunity. And that's the big thing. The ASX just could never, would you say the 16th biggest in the world?
16th, yeah.
Which is like quite interesting because the Australian economy is a pretty big economy.
It's a decent-sized economy. Yeah. We just don't have the money. We're a housing investor.
Yeah, that's true.
That's where people want to put their money.
Bricks and mortar.
If they've got 50 grand, they want to put it into a property.
Yeah, that's
rather
true.
Rather than the stock market.
That's true. That's true. So what we want to talk about on this podcast is, really just delve into what the differences are, a comparison between the ASX and the S&P. 500, and just sort of come about, I suppose, with a bit of a conclusion, hopefully, as to what we think is the sort of best way to go. I think you can probably sort of guess where we're heading already, but it's worth just sort of diving in and maybe having a bit of a intro fill on what is the ASX made up of. It's 200, so it's 200 companies. Like, just a bit of a
200 companies.
Who's in there? What sort of companies are we talking about in general? I know that's a bit of a broad thing, but
200 companies, top 200 by market capitalization. So that's the number of shares that they have outstanding by the stock
price. Top 200 countries in Australia.
That's ASX 200. And it kind of fluctuates. Obviously, a share price fluctuates what position they hold, but all your big names are in there, your mining companies, your telcos, all the banks, it's particularly the top 20. You have your pretty big retailers, JB Hi-Fi fits into that. They kind of go out into the fringe.
Are Kogan in them?
I don't think he is. I think he's, or he might be just on the outside. He's just gone past that $2 billion market capitalization, I think. I don't know the whole 200.
That's a test.
It's probably about
start in reverse. Let's do it in reverse. 200 to one. Ready? It's like the top 100 countdown. Ready? No, I'll be kidding. So there's big players in there.
Oh, it's massive players
in the Australian scene. As you can imagine.
Interesting stat, because I love interesting
stats. You love stats. You're getting excited just thinking of this stat.
I hope this is true. There's only 48 companies that are worth over $10 billion.
In the ASX.
In the ASX, yeah.
How many? 48?
48.
That's quite a lot.
It's not.
And not in comparison to the S&P. I know you're going to say that. But in terms of the Australian context, I mean, 25 million people, like, Yeah, I don't know. Like, it is a big economy.
And the reason I point that out is because part of, like, Warren Buffett's investing strategy is he likes looking for big companies.
Yeah.
So he'll look for companies with a market cap of at least $10 billion.
Yep.
So if you're a value investor and want to follow that method in Australia, you automatically have 48 stocks to play with.
Yeah, right.
So it just kind of narrows down your focus.
Significantly narrows down your focus, yeah.
Yeah.
What would be the biggest, do you know the biggest company in terms of market cap that's on there?
I think it's CommBank. I think they're about $150 billion.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, that would probably make sense, actually. I can't think of much else that would be able to compete with the banks. And mining companies was the only other one. But, yeah, I don't know where BHP and things would fit in there. So, yeah, so the ASX is a safe bet. There's, you know, lots of blue chip. But, you know, from our perspective, as Phil was sort of pointing out, it does lack that sort of that extent of companies and opportunity that you'll get in the S&P 500. So I suppose a bit of a brief on the S&P as well, Phil.
So I'll just caught up on the other data. That's very interesting. And it does it in alphabetical order. Just looking up the data to see which one the biggest is.
Oh, yeah. What is it? Is it CommBank?
Where is CommBank? 41. Yeah, I'm not finding much bigger. CSL's picked up a lot.
That would make sense because the ASX is generally known to be dominated by banks and mining. And that's where you'll see changes in the ASX. There'll be swings happening in relation to a small number of companies. So the Royal Banking Commission, there would have been a hit on the ASX because it's so reliant on a small group of quite large companies. Whereas the S&P has so many large companies, it doesn't really get as affected by individual companies like that.
Yeah, CommBank followed by BHPs.
Yeah, okay. That sort of makes sense, yep.
Yeah, interesting.
So, S&P 500?
S&P 500, top 500 companies in the United States by market capitalization.
Yep.
And, there's a few other indices. Like another one's called Dow Jones Index, which is top 30 companies in the United States, just the top 30.
Oh, is that what the Dow Jones is?
Yeah, and it doesn't include, I forget which companies aren't included, something like Google's not in there because they're so big that they'd manipulate the data.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they'd soar so much, it look like the Dow Jones is increased by 10,000% every year for last.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
So it's actually selective as to who goes into that because, particularly now, I don't think Facebook's in there either. Because those two companies are just skew the results of a benchmark.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
But S&P 500, top 500 companies in the United States. And the S&P stands for Standard & Poor's. So that's a company that measures the top 500.
Yep. They do ratings as well for countries.
They do ratings. Yeah, they do
Got a question for you. How do you get into a stock market? So you've gone public. Does it just automatically happen if your market cap rises to a certain amount, or do you have to apply to get into these, to get recognized in these markets? So let's take the ASX 200. So let's say you're at 201, and your market cap increases. You have a great couple of years, or whatever. Do you automatically then jump up?
Yeah, you just automatically go in there. Yeah.
Okay, so literally they just go, okay, so this is what the companies have released in terms of results. Let's just put it into a spreadsheet, basically, and this is what the top 200
is. It's just that share price by outstanding shares. That's what it is. So revenue is even irrelevant. You could be losing money and go up significantly if people are paying more per stock.
Yeah, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense, yeah. And just another question I had was, if you have... what was I going to say? I've forgotten. I've forgotten the question.
Fantastic. This is up there with the coughing. Gareth's on fire.
Sorry. This is Australia Day weekend. So.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
No, I'm just trying to think. I did have a question about. So if you're a company, let's say you're based in Australia.
Yeah.
And you can obviously go public in the US. Yeah. So you just go to the US and you just speak to investment houses. Like, how does that actually work? Once that happens, can you only go public in the US? Like, could you then go to Australia and release, go public over here and release stocks into the...
So, answer for everything is yes. You can list on US market, you list in the UK market. And that's what Atlassian did.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure if they were counted as an Australian company, they'd perhaps be one of the biggest, certainly the top three with their market capitalization. Atlassian, the software engineer guys. They do a lot of online products and...
Okay.
Haven't heard?
No, never heard of them. No.
Those two are like the richest people in Australia. Oh, not really? Australia, they're like top five or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they listed over in the US market.
Never heard of them. I mean, I'm sure I've used their products, but I've just never heard of them.
Probably use them at work all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and you can do that. And then what they do is a secondary listing. So you can list in the US and then you can list in other countries as well. So you, you know, mitigate the currency risk. So you might have, let's say, Facebook list in America. Then you might be able to buy Facebook shares in Australia because they've cross-listed.
Yeah,
my general rule is don't get involved in that.
Why is that?
Because it's just a... the returns aren't exactly the same, and they generally don't perform as well. If you're interested in buying a company, I'd tend to go to the
primary listing.
The primary listing from that, from that country.
Yeah, right. You're interested. Yeah. Oh, no, thanks for that. So there was just a couple of questions. I did remember at the end. Looking at the two then, so you got the ASX 200. Let's start with, what are the benefits? What is a benefit for a person? One thing we've talked about before, so we've done a couple of different podcasts around this idea. And I think it's always really interesting. We get a lot of people asking us about it. And yes, Phil says a lot of people that we're talking to who are part of our cheeky crew, they actually would only really go around the ASX. They don't know a huge amount about the US stock market. But what are the benefits of the ASX of investing in Australian
stocks? Yeah, well Australia, it's one of the top dividend paying stock markets.
Mm-hmm.
So the average is 4.8% in Australia. Whereas US is 1.9% dividend That's yield.
Massive difference.
Yeah, so right. and Australians love a good dividend yield.
Yeah. it's cash in hand. You get money back. Yeah.
So and that's a massive advantage. And you see banks paying 6-7% isn't unusual. Whereas banks in the United States they consider 3.5%. Sort of a massive amount.
Sure.
So, dividends are huge in Australia.
That's right.
One of the biggest.
Okay.
Biggest things.
Yeah. And is there safety in knowing what you know? Like, is there safety? Because obviously, a lot of our audience is Australian. Like, is there safety? In your view, is there a benefit to be safe and look at companies that you're aware of as household brands?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a matter of safe. It's just kind of what you know. You can keep an eye on it. Like, you're on the ground a lot more. So if you're doing research, and it's just kind of by, you know, if you're walking around shopping centres in Australia, you'll get a feel for what JB Hi-Fi is doing, opposed to an American trying to just look at data on the internet.
Yeah.
So you can get that sort of advantage as well. Something like Afterpay, that's gone up massively in recent times. Again, you start seeing those signs put on, shop fronts in Westfield.
Yep.
That's a good indication that company is doing well. And you won't get access to that data until after it's done if you're investing.
The media will only release that after. Yeah,
it will,
So
that's one of the advantages of investing in your market that you're kind of living.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, certainly the dividend area is something that we probably haven't explored as much. I mean, we're not so big into dividend investing. It is its own sort of world in a way, but that obviously is something. I know Australia, you've spoken before about the sort of, you know, the classic Aussies is,
well dividend investing is hard because it's, for me, you don't invest in stocks particularly for income. Like if you've got $1 million and it's a 6% dividend yield, that's 60 grand.
Yeah.
60 grand a year is what you end up with. So you need a massive amount to sort of build to that.
Yeah.
And then inherently dividend, high-paying dividend stocks generally don't go up a lot. So it's a slower growth rate. So it takes even longer to kind of get to that million unless you're pumping money in constantly.
Yeah, okay.
So if you're looking for, you know, income, I don't know if I'd use stocks as a main vehicle for income sort of sources.
No. Yeah, that's fair.
I think real estate, you could probably get a bit more leverage and generate that
or
income.
Or even REITs.
I mean, real estate investment trusts.
Yeah.
So we use stocks generally for much more, you know, capital growth.
Definitely. And that's what we preach, and that's right. So the dividend thing is definitely there, and it's big. I suspect it's a slightly more older school look. I mean, I know, you know, we've spoken before about, you know, my granddad worked at Smurfit's, which is a sort of paper and sort of a box like manufacturing business, but it was huge. They're on the stock exchange, and they're a multi-conglomerate business. They're everywhere. But he got stocks, you know, when he joined the company. He got to management. This is the old, you know. And my parents benefited from that. So they sold those stocks to, you know, buy houses or whatever. But it's interesting, like that sort of world of like where you sort of go, hey, here's my money. I'm gonna put it in there and I'll leave it for like 25 years.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work anymore. And I think the dividend investing is part of that idea of, oh, I'll just leave it in and just the dividend comes back and I might even reinvest that. And then, you know, that's not, unfortunately, the market doesn't really work.
Well, it's a weird concept, and I won't go into too much detail because it's not a dividend podcast, but essentially they're paying you a dividend. Then you've got to go and find somewhere else to invest that at a higher return. It's pretty much management saying, nah, we can't do much with this. We're going to give you your money back.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
We can't grow the company massively and increase the stock price. You know, here's 7%. And then me as an investor, I've got to go find something else to put my money into.
Yeah, that's true.
And if I put it back into that company, it's kind of, you know, well, they paid me this money because they can't do much better than
with
it.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Why do I keep giving them capital to then give? Yeah, it's
that's
weird.
True. No, interesting. Okay, so that's a couple of the benefits of the ASX. S&P 500, I think, for me, the biggest benefit is just so many companies on there, so much liquidity, so much movement, so much exchange, so much trading. It's just a vast conglomerate of massive, just lovely trading numbers just everywhere. Yeah, yeah.
The thing that it comes down to, I like, is two elements for a good stock. It's an everyday company with global appeal. So again, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, people are using those every day across the world. You know, whereas there's not a lot of Australian companies that works with.
No.
Afterpay is probably an exception at the moment. They're growing over to sort of UK markets.
Yeah,
and
right.
People are using that sort of every day. But, you know, people, you know, CommBank generally don't have a international, well, massive international customer base.
No.
You generally have to have some link to Australia to, you know, to kind of use that or purchase it. So that's one of the biggest advantages of the US. They generally have more global, like seriously global kind of companies.
Yeah. And anything else in there in terms of, so if it's the other thing, I suppose for me is a numbers thing. If there's 500 companies, at the end of that 500, you're going to have companies that are big but have potential big growth opportunities.
Yeah.
As opposed to 200. You know, 200, you're restricted to 200 companies. So there must be benefit as well in terms of saying, right, there's all these companies. Obviously, it's a different scale, so those 500 companies are still very big companies. They're not like growth investing companies, but still they're at a stage where you could potentially get high growth. I mean, I'm sure Google had worked its way up in the last couple of years from somewhere up to...
And they do. And to put it into perspective, I think something like Booking.com would be worth as much, if not more, than Westpac.
Yeah.
And that's a...
Interesting. Yeah, that's right.
It hardly gets mentioned
in
the media, Booking.com.
Yeah, no, that's it's a website, isn't it? That's it. Yeah, no, that's right. It's a good example.
So there's just
the reality
of so much more money.
Yeah.
There's plenty of stats. 31, almost 32 trillion, I think, US stock market's worth. Australia probably gone over 2 trillion now with the recent
increase. I think
you
were saying you always pull out the one about Apple. So Apple trades more than the ASX, is that right?
Number of stocks traded in Apple in a day is twice that of the entire Australian market.
Wow.
So that's just
so
Apple. So
one company. Obviously Apple's big, but it's still one company.
So what that does is it's a really good area for trading as well.
Yep.
Kind of like day trading because the liquidity is there for price movement.
Yeah, and that's what we're big into. So the next question I have is ease of access.
Yep.
Looking at the two. So let's take this time the S&P.
Yep.
How easy is it for Australians? And obviously there's Americans. Hello, Americans. You are another big part of our audience. But let's say principally Australians. How easy is it to invest in the US?
Super easy now. It used to be a lot more challenging, even up to the last sort of 12 to 18 months. But CommBank have always had this thing where you can invest internationally. You just have to fill out this tediously long form.
Okay.
And you can access that market. So it's generally much more expensive. But guys at stake.com.au make it pretty seamless.
Yep.
You know, the form's almost done for you, or done it in much better experience than the Commonwealth Bank one. And they've got, you know, free trades. You can trade for free rather than paying the $10, $20, $30, you know, that CommBank or other banks charge. So it's a lot more affordable, a lot easier now. You can kind of do that within the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas previously it'd be, I mean, 15 years ago it'd be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Trying to get access to that market. So
yeah, you'd have to pay a lot to do it, I assume, and there was a lot of work and paperwork involved to get there.
And outside of that, there's probably the index funds now.
Yes.
That you can jump in and take advantage of much easier than what it was in the past.
Yeah. For me, I use Stake. Stake is so super easy. It's incredible actually how easy it is. It's, you know, it's the world of apps is so good because it's just go bang, you put the money in, and I think it's $50 minimum trade, which because ComSec is 500 minimum 500 still, is it? Or did they reduce that recently?
They've got like a different version.
They've got a type that you can, for it to compete, I suppose.
But general rule is 500 your minimum.
Yeah, yeah. And how about in the ASX? What's the same thing, I suppose? Is it pretty easy with apps now? Raise?
Yeah, Raise gets you in kind of easily. It gets you into an ETF.
Yeah.
ETF or index fund.
Yeah.
I still don't go much past CommBank for my investing in Australia.
How much is that? Do you get charged to
invest? Yeah, it's like $10. If you have an account with CommBank, like not necessarily a savings account, but you set up your investing bank account, it's $10 a trade up to $1,000 trades, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, right.
And then above that, it's $20 in, $20 out.
Yeah, right.
And then it just scales. The more you put in, the less it costs as a percentage.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So again, look, there's a couple of easy ways to access. I mean, the US market, again, because of its size, I suspect there's actually probably easier ways to kind of get into it. We've mentioned stake.com. The other one is Robinhood, which I think is coming over here.
Yeah, there's always talks about it coming over here.
Seems to have been on the cards for a while. I can't see why they wouldn't do it, particularly if Stake have sort of broken that mold and done it. You know, there's a way for other companies to get into it, and there's a lot of money around for people to invest. So undoubtedly, there's going to be other companies
some competition
that are coming on board. Happens. Yeah. So finally, the final question then is, the one you love, stats, returns. What sort of returns are we looking at?
I mean, you look at a long run over 20 years, it's probably about even. And one of the reasons that is, you know, sort of the markets went in very opposite directions in early 2000s. Australia went up in the mining boom.
Yeah.
And the US went down for the dot-com bubble.
So
you take it from exactly that time, 2000 when it happened, went in both very different directions. But the one I like bringing all my data points back to is 2009, because I think the world changed a lot then. After the GFC.
Yep.
And also, you know, internet and Facebook really started to pick up in those times, which gave us access to information more so than anything.
Yep.
You know, internet gave us, well, it's just the information hub. So we could look up data and information and stuff on international stocks, which made it a lot easier. And I think a lot more people got into those markets. Change the world of raising funds and having more people with more money. So 2009 to today, I mean, the Australian markets returned a total of about 108% in that last sort of 10 years. The S&P 500 is about 342%.
Okay.
So it's more than triple what the Australian market's done in the last 10 years. And again, over 20 years, it's probably about even, but the last 10 years, because I think the market dynamics have just changed so much. You know, the from 2000 onwards is almost sort of, it's not irrelevant, but it's very, very different times.
Yep. And 10 years about right for looking at these blocks, because the reality is for most people, they're not thinking a 20-year investing period. You know, 10 years about right. And you're right, the GFC, that changed everything. And you sort of emerged out of that was the new market, so to speak, as the new ways of doing things.
And Australia had the mining boom, which isn't there now.
That market
from 2003 to 2008 went up massively.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of led the way. So it's kind of relying on one segment to do it. Whereas if you look at the US, there's so many different elements that make that market do well.
That's good. Very interesting. So we've had a chat through all very loosely the sort of various aspects of both. I suppose the final question, as always, is, I think I know what your answer is going to be. Actually, I do know what your answer is going to be, because our whole scene is about this. But what's your favorite stock market to invest in?
Overall, it's a US market. You just get access again to those everyday companies with global appeal.
Yep.
But I still have Australian stocks. The dividends are just hard to kind of ignore.
Yep.
The companies that you know, pay a good dividend when they're kind of undervalued. So you look at banks who are quite undervalued. Recently, CommBank, I've done the video analysis on it, but it was like $72 a share.
Yeah.
I think it's up to $83, $84 a share. So you're looking at that growth rate, as well as they throw an extra 6% dividend yield on top of that every year.
So you get up to 90% then, yeah.
Yeah, it's making it a massive sort of return. So they really help in terms of the overall return.
Yeah.
So if they're just looking to return, say, 7 or 8% per year, but you get a dividend yield in there as well, it brings it up to sort of double digits.
Yeah. No, that's good. Completely agree. I think the US has opportunity, and that's the key thing for us. That's what we're all about, is getting your education, you know, knowing your market, knowing your stock, knowing yourself, and then using that to get onto the stock market. And really, the US is incomparable. There's just so many opportunities, so many sectors. You know, large emerging sectors like the cannabis sector that's just seen, lots of different things happening. And yeah, for me, 100%. I think the ASX, there is opportunity there, but certainly for me as a new investor, I'd rather put the money that I have into the US stock market, because I just see that there's greater returns. So probably not unsurprising, but still, I think an interesting review of how both markets compared to each other very loosely. If anybody wants any further information on either stock market or on the apps that we've talked about, particularly Stake, just give us a shout, send us a message, get onto our Facebook page. As always, thank you very much for listening. It's always a pleasure to have you. And apologies for my cough. So don't forget to check us out. We're on Facebook, Cheeky Investor, Instagram, Cheeky Investor, and our website, where we've got lots of cool products and info and offers, is cheekyinvestor.com. So thanks again, and yeah, we'll check you next time.